Session number 3994, Rule 7.
Brigadier Brooke, Reel 7.
Telling me about your sword that you thought was lost.
Well, off went my orderly with my sword on his saddle, and I never expected to see it again. After the war, a chap got in touch with me from America to say that he'd, in 1942 or 43, he'd been searching an Ethiopian village miles, hundreds of miles away, for some particular purpose. And in the course of searching the village, he came on a sword, which he recognized as a British sword, examined the blade and found my initials on it, OGB, had kept it and returned it to me long after the war, and it was rusted and pitted, and Wilkinson Sword Company, who made it, was so pleased with the story that they buffed it up for me for free.
Did you find the Somali reaction to the British changed in any way in 1941 when you went back?
No, the only thing that was notable, I didn't hear this myself, but one of the civil administration told me that when the reoccupation was complete, they had a durbar, or get-together, of the headmen and the administration. And the Somalis, who were very talkative, they talked the hind leg off a donkey. The senior Arkil, the senior headman, got up and said, Salb, I know we talk a lot, but we have seen both sides of this, and now we have nothing to say except welcome back. Or words to that effect.
What changes did you find after the war in Somaliland?
I found a lot of changes. Not all of them for the good, not all of them for the better. Sadly, I think one's got to say that when, after the war, when I was commanding the Somaliland Scouts in the Ogaden, life had changed very, very little. Very little. The whole attitude had changed very little. In Hargeisa, which had then become the capital city, capital town, things had changed most drastically, as they had in the rest of the country, and notably in the matter of honesty. Before the war, you could go out shooting. The odd officer had a car, and one could safely go out, say, three of you in a car, and an open car, leave it by the roadside, spend the evening shooting, leaving in the car coats, cartridges, spare gun even. And when you came back, all you would find would be a ring of Somalis sitting on their haunches around it, waiting for you to come back to see who it was. Nothing was ever touched, nothing was ever stolen at all. And by the time the war was over and done with, you couldn't leave a pair of socks hanging outside to dry. The thieving had become rampant. That was directly the influence of the Western world on the Somali morals.
In what way?
Well, literally, if you'd done the same thing with the same car and the same circumstances going out shooting, you'd come back to find the wheels had gone and the battery. Literally. And I once lunch party in my bungalow in Hargeisa. I had some cause for concern. I had a guest tent. I had somebody staying, and there was a guest tent in the garden. And I heard this noise, and I looked from my lunch party. I looked out to see what was happening, and there were two Somalis cutting the tent to pieces for the cloth. And they disappeared over the fence, and that was that. A thing that would have been absolutely inconceivable. Inconceivable. You said, no, don't be silly, out of your mind. It couldn't have happened. And I think the introduction of dishonesty was the greatest disservice we did. Politics, of course, loomed again, very much larger than they ever did before. Politics really took no part in, played no part in life at all between the wars.
Between the wars, was there any degree of what later became known as Africanization?
No, not really, because the British numbers were so small that there was practically no room for it. And things like the telegraphists, the postmasters, were Indians, and one Somali did, who I think is now ambassador to the United Nations, put himself forward as a postmaster, and was a jolly good chap too, called Michael Mariano. He was I think he was educated in Aden and the Sudan, and he got a very good brain and was a very good chap. But there was really no envy. I never felt any sense that the Somalis were after the jobs.
In fact, I think you tell me an interesting anecdote about Somali Independence Day.
Considering the trials and tribulations that have gone on in so many other colonial possessions, and considering what a volatile and excitable, inflammable people the Somalis are, it was, I thought, very touching that I went out to represent the War Office at the Independence in 1960. I went to various functions, and a lot of speech-making went on, and I was probably the only person there, only white man there, who could talk Somali. I understood Somali well enough. And both in public and in private, there wasn't one single crack, one single unkind remark about the British in a speech by a Somali politician to a Somali crowd, which I think in itself was quite something. And on the very last, when the British flag came down, an enormous crowd, the British flag came down before the Somali flag was hoisted for the first time, and a little section of the crowd in one corner started chiaiking and jeering, and they were shut up at once, not by the police or anybody else, but by their own fellow countrymen, who said, "Oh, shut up, turn it in," and they shut up. And so the whole of that, the transfer of power, was, there wasn't, there were arguments about grants, that was on Treasury level really, what the size of the grant in aid would be for the first 2 years and so on. That was government stuff at Whitehall level. But the actual transfer of power was completely smooth, completely amicable.
How do you look back now on your time in Somaliland?
Well, I think, looking back over the last hour or two, I've no doubt that anybody listening to me in 100 years' time would say that I'm taking an unduly rosy view, that I'm left with memories unclouded by any unpleasantness, and everything was sweetness and light. And on serious reflection, I don't think that I've overstated the case. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I got the most devoted, wonderful service, both in the sense of Abdullahi Farah, my head servant, to all the soldiers. One had the odd crossed swords with the odd soldier, inevitably, but minimal. And I found tremendous loyalty, tremendous determination, and a great sense of enjoyment that I certainly enjoyed myself, and I get the impression, I'm left with the impression, that the Somalis enjoyed our company. I was very touched when Independence arrived, and I was out there staying with the chap then commanding the place. And I went out one morning after breakfast and saw a familiar figure under a tree. And he had come some 300 miles to see me. And that was the ex-sergeant major who had said that if England was all right, all was well.
Looking back, what do you think were the advantages of serving in Somaliland for
Oh, for me, I think in the first place, I'd never done a hand's turn of work. I'd been completely idle in my British service, and being left on my own, given responsibility and something to get on with, I learned to work and enjoy my work. That was probably the biggest thing I gained out of it, and enjoyed the work and some hard work for the rest of my service. And that was probably the greatest thing that I got out of it. I got out of it a tremendous amount of fun. I learned a whole lot about a totally new set of human beings. I made some wonderful friends, white and Somali, and altogether it was for me the most satisfying period of my working life.
Can you think of any disadvantages of having worked in Somali?
Not really. I don't think I would unscramble the egg if I could.
Brigadier Brooke, thank you very much for sharing your memories with us.